Drew McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the Claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
If the world were like a Sleep Number mattress, everything would adapt for your comfort. Because as your life changes and your body changes, Sleep Number mattresses adapt and shift to give you personalized comfort night after night. And now everything's on sale during our Memorial Day event. Save up to $1,200 on mattresses, plus free delivery when you add a base. Ends Monday. To experience a whole new world of comfort, visit a Sleep Number store or go to sleepnumber.com. Sleep Number. To a good life's sleep.
And we are live with Wendy Passante. Now, Wendy has got a harrowing story, surviving Epstein. So, you know, disclaimers and all that stuff, a graphic content warning. And I've watched her on Soft White Underbelly, phenomenal speaker. Shout out to that channel, doing great work, you know, helping survivors get the stories out there. And Wendy's new to this channel, so it's first time here, viewers. So if you want to support Wendy's work, her website, wendypassante.com, Instagram, TikTok, all the links are in the description box below the video. I'll put them in the live chat as well. And I was telling Wendy, you know, we like to have a story in the order it happens and go on that journey with the guest. So huge thank you for coming on, firstly, Wendy. And, you know, let's just go back to what was it like for you growing up?
Well, excuse me. Thank you for having me. I will be honest. I don't go on media a lot, so I hadn't really heard your name. But when I told my friends who you were, they were really excited for me.
Oh, that's good to hear. Thank you.
Okay. Going back, I was born in Hillbilly, West Virginia, you know, and when I say hillbilly, I'm not just saying that. We had outhouses, we had, you know, we were literally playing in the woods with sticks and forks and creeks and catching crawdads and killing ants and just, you know, everything outdoors. I was born to a mom and dad. I like to say that I was planned, which they shouldn't have planned me. But I was planned, and my mom really wanted a little girl with blonde hair and blue eyes, and to name her Wendy after Casper and Wendy the witch. So I'm named after a witch. A friendly one. My mom and my dad, I was the second kid. They were married for 10 years. So about 5 years in is when they had me. They lasted about five more years, and it was really toxic, just fighting all the time. My dad was really jealous. He didn't want to work. His family hated my mom. There's even rumors that my grandma, my dad's mom, offered my dad like a brand new Corvette if he leave my mom alone, and he said no, which back in those days would have been something huge for, you know, a poor family. But that could be all a lie too, family folklore. and they got divorced. I remember one, the very, very earliest memory I have is the night that they fought and got divorced. I want to say I was like four or five. It was the middle of the night. My mom had just put me to bed. I was upset. I didn't want to be, you know, I didn't want to go to bed, of course, a kid. And I hear my mom and my dad, you know, physically fighting. We lived in a trailer, so the walls are really thin. You can hear everything. And my little five-year-old self runs in there, and my dad has a leopard underwear on, and he has my mom pinned up against the the wall, and he's like swinging on her and she's swinging on him, and I run up behind him and I'm hitting his little butt cheeks because that's all I could reach, but I'm hitting with all my might. And my mom took us out of there that night, ran in the dark. I guess she had this planned, and we went to a domestic violence shelter. So we stayed there for a little bit. It wasn't like long term or anything. It was just a little bit. They planned on how to separate and everything. And then a couple years, my dad was crazy. My mom would have to drive home with no headlights on. She'd get followed. She'd get stalked. She'd have to watch me very carefully. I was always by her side. My brother kind of, when they got divorced, it was my brother went with my dad and I stayed with my mom. My brother was doing bad things already, huffing paint and getting, and drugs and stuff like that. So it was probably better that he went with dad, who was going to let him do that, basically. So after that, I didn't really have a relationship with my father. He was the kind of guy that if he met a woman, he always had a woman. And if the woman in his life forced him to be a father, then he would be a dad to me. And that lasted till I was about 10. So about 5 years of in and out and, going off. And then I just eventually completely cut ties, which he did try to come back into my life as an adult after I had a kid. And he's very racist. I hope that's not a code word.
No, that's fine.
Okay. Very racist. When he found out that I had a biracial daughter, I don't think I was like, I have my daughter's half black. He was like, oh, that's fine. And in my head, I'm like, I know that's not, because you just called me an N-word lover 3 years ago. Mm. Men in my life have always been kind of toxic. But going back to when my parents divorced, I was 5 years old. Me and my mom were together it was just me and her for a long time. And she was the party mom. I went with her, to bars. I went with her to parties. We had parties at the house. We were, going out in the fields and I don't know what they call it, mudding. You go in a truck and you go mudding, whatever. But I was like her little sidekick, and we were very close during that time. And this is all in West Virginia. I had my grandparents then. We weren't very stable in one location. And then my mom met my stepdad, who, looking back right now, or even to this day, he's the only parent figure that I can rely on and call, and he would be here in a heartbeat. So saying anything bad about him is, we all have our history and bad parenting moments. But anyways, she met my stepdad, who had 5 kids of his own. And they were all my age or older. And they got married, and we all moved together. And it was just me, the youngest girl, and then all these older kids. And my stepdad worked for CSX Railroad. So I don't know if you know. The railroad is all over, and with that many kids and a family to support, you go where the money is. So he was a roadmaster. So he would, and he also suffered from bipolar. So, if you know anything about bipolar, they sometimes will like obsessively apply for jobs to get more money and more money. And they do that over and over and over. Well, that resulted in us moving over and over, like several times a year. Different states, different towns, different schools. That was the big thing. And I'm talking like I counted it one time when I was like 16, and I made it to like 30 to 40 places I had lived. And I knew that there was more, and then we moved a lot more after that. So it's like every time I got settled somewhere, or we got settled somewhere, they'd rip me out and I'd have to go make new friends. And
that's terrible.
That is, you know, even thinking back to this to today, like that was the worst feeling to do over and over and over again, that I would never, I vowed that my child will stay in the same school system her whole life. That I, and at 18, I'll move when she's 18 and out of school, I, you know, free to move wherever I want. But this is so important to me because I know how it is as a kid to not only, you know, you're picked on at home because you're the youngest, and now you're coming into this family because, you know, they're a family and you're the odd one out, and they think you're spoiled and they pick on you and they bully you and they teach you bad things and they, you know, I always like talk to my husband. I'm, you know, when you're mad and you're like, I'll beat somebody up, you know, whatever. My husband would be like, have you ever even been in a fight? I'd be like, no, but I've been beat up. So like, my first bullies were at home, and they were with siblings. They were with parental figures. And that led to all the moving, and that aspect led to me to seek outside, you know, comfort, friends, whatever. And when you're moving so much, you want to fit in, you just lie. And I'm, you know, people say, well, she's really giving herself a lot of credibility now. You know, she says she was a liar. I lied a lot as a kid because I was trying to fit in. I was literally just trying to say, yeah, I'm cool. I'm a part of that too. You know, it wasn't like something happened to me and then I lied about it, you know, to get somebody in trouble, whatever. Anyways, so there would be times where I would meet new friends and they'd be like, hey, have you smoked or drank, or have you done this or that? And I'd be like, yeah, I have. I do it all the time, you know, and complete lies fit in. And that led to doing some narcotics at the age of 11. I hadn't drank, I hadn't smoked or anything, and I was doing some pretty hard stuff at the age of 11, and all because I lied. Somebody said, hey, have you done this before? And I said, yeah, and did it. And after that, it was kind of like off to the races. Nobody ever noticed, my family never noticed, and people are always like, well, where were their parents or her parents or everything? That's a very big question. Well, as you know, my mom was at home trying to raise, now she had another baby, 6-7 kids at a time. And we're all getting in trouble. We got some that are related to, you know, community G word violence. We have people who were bringing grown men, sneaking them into our house. We have, you know, just stealing, going to stores and stealing. Any bad thing a kid could do, we were doing it. And that is what led me to getting this small group of friends in Florida. And I like to say, I grew up in a trailer park. I was the trailer park group They have they, there's different groups. We have the models, we have the trailer park miners. You know, kind of like that's how it seems. We were just at an event. We went to Virginia's memorial, and you know, it was very beautiful and everything. We were taking pictures, and I can't remember who said something. I think it was Danny, and she was like, "Oh, you want me to take a picture with all the models because they're so small?" And I was like, "We're so pretty. Can you just get in there?" Order. Yeah. In my neighborhood, it was a group of trailer park kids. We didn't have money. We didn't have a lot of parental guidance. We had a lot of freedom. We were, you know, we could say we were spending the night at so and so's house, and we weren't really there. As the memes on Facebook say, we were in a field somewhere dying, you know, and our parents thought we were at a sleepover. That's kind of what was happening. And the times that I did get in trouble, they weren't re it wasn't real trouble. It was one time my mom found a stash of something that I shouldn't have had, okay? And she put the stash in the kitchen on the table with a little post-it note that said, "I found your stash. We need to talk." Under the post-it note was the stash. Like, you let me keep it? And I just did it. Like, I at some point she was just like, she gave up, and she knew that I was super sneaky and manipulative at that point, to where like there was no telling me, like, I guess I just knew that none of my other siblings were following the rules, and I wasn't going to either. So when we were in Florida, my little group of friends in the trailer park, we were very close. We had very many firsts as teenagers together, going to parties, hanging out with boys and stuff like that. And there was this one girl who we all thought was beautiful. Like, just, we all envied her. She was gorgeous. She, even today, she's gorgeous. And we all wanted to be her friend. The girl that we all thought was beautiful.
Yes.
We were about 13, 14. And there's about four or five of us. She does not live in our neighborhood. She, what I call a plant.
An
She,
interloper.
yeah, a plant. And she actually worked for him. And we did not realize that until a little bit after. But she picked us off one by one, who was willing to go.
And when you say work for him, could you?
Yeah, recruited.
Epstein.
Yes. She worked for Epstein. She recruited girls for him, underage girls. This happened over like a couple of weeks, I would say. It wasn't like a long period of time, but it was really quick. So she would convince one of us to go, and we'd go over there, and it would be a massage. And I believe everyone's experience was a little different, even in our little friend group, from what I know now. But the first person who went, she was too developed for him and was turned away, which is, and when I, and we say too developed, you know, she had bigger. She was developed for a younger girl.
How old is she?
She was our age, 14. And she was turned away. He did not like her. And then the next girl, I believe, was brought. I want to say it was Jenna. I don't know. And if anyone knows Jenna's story or knows where we were, we still do a lot of public things together today. She went and she was assaulted. It's like a massage turned assault. Every encounter lasts about 30 minutes. And when I say 30 minutes, it's literally probably got a timer. There was a timer, but I can't remember exactly like how many minutes because I was just, I believe, blacked out in that moment. So after Jenna went, then I believe I was the third person they convinced. So they approach you in a way that, you know, all your friends are together. They've all went. They were fine. They got paid $200. Nothing super bad happened. It was fine. It was just some old creepy guy that liked young girls and he wanted to see new faces and that I would be able to go and get $200. And me being, you know, the fast kid that I was and coming from a poor background, you know, they picked girls that were not likely to say no when it came to money. So I went, and my experience was different in the sense that there really wasn't a massage part. We drove there. There was three of us. We rode over there to Palm Beach Island. That's where we were in Palm Beach, in a taxi cab, which come to find out that taxi cab had to have been shuffling girls in and out all day, all week, probably on a payroll. And we go there. I'm taken straight upstairs by the beautiful girl. And she immediately leaves and says, Jeffrey will be in soon. And he'll tell you, you know, what he likes. They've got, you know, oils, lotions, and a massage bed and everything laid out there. You're basically like in a foyer of a bathroom type of thing. And he comes in and he's in a towel and he doesn't lay down like a massage would, you know, on your stomach, you know, you're massaging your back. He lays straight up. And he immediately says, okay, you're going to start on my chest. I want you to, you know, he's very specific. He wants you to pinch areas and twist them, on his chest. I'm being careful with words because I didn't read those code words. I won't lie. but he's very specific. He wants you to do this. He likes it this way. And at the same time, he's like, he can tell that I'm uncomfortable, but he's not like mean about it. He's not like what you would think, like if you were being R'd, it's not like nothing forceful like that. It was just, you know, he would ask, are you okay with that? Or do you like that? Or do you want to do this? Or can I do that? Or stuff like that. And, you know, me, I'm just like, let's get out it, you know, get over with it. Come on, whatever you got to do. So he immediately face up, drops the towel completely, you know, naked. I'm 14 years old. I have been groomed for this specific appointment because I was told that you would stand there in just your undergarments. So a 14-year-old does not have lingerie. So the cool girl, you know, set that up for us, for all of us, got us dressed, put our makeup on, and that was part of the process. So I'm there in my underwear and my bra, and he, you know, asks if he can take this off or your underwear off, and he just starts pleasuring himself pretty aggressively at the same time as he's fondling me putting his hands in places that they shouldn't be at a 14-year-old. And, you know, that happens. The timer goes off. He's unsatisfied. And this is where people are like, aren't you embarrassed to say this? No, because he should be embarrassed. He's unsatisfied. He couldn't get off. So he gets off the table. He's like huffing and puffing. You can tell that he's aggravated. He throws the towel back around his waist. He says, go downstairs and get so-and-so and tell her to come back up here. So I went downstairs and, you know, I'm fine. At this point, I'm just happy it's over. And I did what I can, you know, what I agreed, I guess, to come to do. And what I believe happened was she went up there and finished it and came back down and everything was all fine. We get back into the same, I don't know if you guys can hear that, but I have parrots.
Okay.
It's not kids screaming in the background. But we get back into the cab and we go to the girl's house. We start drinking immediately and we say, okay, we're going to go to the bars, which is something that this girl was, it was not uncommon for her. She was down there all the time. The guys there knew her. We're all 14. Like, we had this perception in our head that this cool girl was much older than us by at least 2 years. So when the files came out, I looked her up and she's born the same year that I was. So it's like, we just had this perception by the way she acted and who she was around that she was much older. She was getting us into bars on Clematis Avenue. We were drinking. We were getting tables with a bunch of older men who were buying us drinks. And we did that for about 2 hours until somebody eventually kicked us out and said, hey, they're underage. And that was kind of like the fallout of my Florida life, I would say. So the we hung out a little bit after that. I heard that a couple more girls were offered to go within our neighborhood. And eventually, I think she picked all of us off that she could and moved on to the next. After that, I was in a car accident. So I actually died and had to be life flighted to the Delray Medical Center. So my life was like halted for about a year and a half where I had to heal. I didn't go to school. I was homeschooled. I don't know if you can see, like, I had to have plastic surgery on my face.
Do you remember the accident?
Yeah, I do. I remember I was in the back seat of an old, like, Chevy, one of them old, like, box, older metal type of cars. And we were going about 55, and a car came into our lane and hit us straight on. And I blacked out visually immediately, but I could hear everything. And I guess I flew from the back seat and hit my head on the windshield and then flew back to the back seat. And the only way that we knew that I had hit the windshield was a big chunk of my hair was stuck in it. Yeah. So I had to, I'm very, very lucky to be alive. All of us are. But it took me a while to heal from that. And during that time, my family moved back again to West Virginia. And I like to say that, but I compare it to, you know, that instance with Jeffrey Epstein kind of opened a door to, now I knew that I didn't have to be poor anymore. And that I could do things and put myself around certain people that would take care of me if I did certain things for them. And, you know, no, at this point, I've healed from my accident. I'm about 16. You know, it took me a while, a year and a half, to fully be able to run the streets again, I guess. but, you know, a 16-year-old shouldn't be looking for older men. And those were always around. And there are always older men willing to do. They're still out there today. That do the same thing. So I kind of bounced around high school in my little town in West Virginia, and I got a reputation pretty quickly. People's parents wouldn't let them hang out with me. You know, I had no parental guidance. I was in trouble all the time. And when I was 17, I was at school and I was skipping school a lot and, you know, driving to school when I didn't have a license. And this is like, I would get caught driving to school without a license. And they have, obviously every school has like a parking lot that you park in, students park in. And I would park there and I'd get in trouble and the principal would call my mom and my mom would come get me and say, you know, she can't drive this car, blah, 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 blah. And then 3 hours later, my mom would drive me back to the school, drop me off, let me get in my car and go about my business. Like, she just let me do it, whether she knew I was going to do it anyways and sneak around or whatever. But
hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
If the world were like a Sleep Number mattress, everything would adapt for your comfort. Because as your life changes and your body changes, Sleep Number mattresses adapt and shift to give you personalized comfort night after night. And now everything's on sale during our Memorial Day event. Save up to $1,200 on mattresses, plus free delivery when you add a base. Ends Monday. To experience a whole new world of comfort, visit a Sleep Number store or go to sleepnumber.com. Sleep Number, to a good life's sleep.
Not too late after that, I was getting in a lot of trouble and the principal called me into his office and he was like, you know, you're not doing so good. I think you should just drop out. And I was like, you know what? I think I should. You're right. And I called my mom right there in his office and he told her and I said, Mom, I'm going to drop out. And she literally just said, okay, see you when you get home. Like there was no trying to convince me or trying to get help or looking for special programs or whatever, you know, there was none of that. I actually didn't get my GED until I went to prison later, but I did get it. And then when I was 17, after I had dropped out of school, I was working fast food. And 3 months before my 18th birthday, I used my fake ID to become a exotic dancer. In the hills of West Virginia, I had an advantage over, you know, I had all my teeth and I made really, really, really good money. I'm not saying that there's not beautiful women in West Virginia, but where I was, I had an advantage. And quickly was bullied there. So I jumped around from club to club and eventually I didn't have to use clubs anymore. I just kind of had like a I don't want to say clientele or whatever that I could just call and get what I needed from them. But when I turned 18, my mom and the family were like, okay, we're moving to Kansas City. You're coming with us. And I was like, no, I'm not. No, I'm not. You know, I'm finally at the age where I can say, I absolutely don't know how I'm going to take care of myself, where I'm going to live or what I'm going to do, but I know I'm not doing that again. So I lived with my best friend for a couple months. And here's another thing where parents pay attention. When I turned 18, my mom was selling this house that they owned prior to when they moved to Kansas City. And they just let me live there rent-free for about 6 months to a year by myself. And it was the party house. We trashed it completely and had a lot of fun times and memories there, I guess. But after that, I had a party at that house, and some of the people, the attendees at the party, robbed my neighbor. And the neighbor was really rich, like known in the town for like owning restaurants and growing farmers and type of stuff. They're just really well known and wealthy. And they stole the woman's purse, and the purse ended up in my house. And me being dumb and probably, under the influence most of the time, I used those credit cards that were in that purse. And I was buying stupid stuff, like shoes for my boyfriend from Foot Locker. I think that's how I actually got caught, was Foot Locker buying shoes for my boyfriend, not even for me. And I got in trouble, and my mom bailed me out the first time, of course. And I couldn't follow the rules of probation, so they violated that, and I went to prison. I'm gonna take a drink. Hold on.
Yeah, you're fine.
I don't know what I can and can't show in these videos. But I ended up violating the probation, and I went to prison for 15 months. I would think I was like 18 to like 19-ish in that area. And I say prison saved my life. It really did. It made me get a GED. It made me really see where I was going to end up in the long run if I kept, because I was in not a juvenile prison. It's a young adult prison. So it's a real prison just for young offenders. And that is so that they give us trade school. We're required to do a trade school and pass. So I did like culinary arts. You're required to get your GED before you're released, and you're required to do so many community hours. It's just same. I don't know. It's a lot easier, and you can get out without serving, because I was facing 10 years. So I did 15 months compared to 10 years. I'll take it. and after that, I moved again to Ohio, but I really... I did what most people say, and I changed all people, places, things, and environment. I came here. I knew nobody. I paroled here. My mom lived here at the time. Go figure. So I lived with her. But I just completely stayed away from all of that. And I was on parole for 3 years. And I got pregnant really quick. My daughter now is 15, and that's a big reason why I speak out. So I think that that's about it. I don't know. It's like in a gist. That's not about it, but that's like the the gist of things. And then being a pro, after the whole Epstein thing. We never talked about it again, because like I said, I was moving. It was kind of dissolved. Back in 2007, 2008, the first time he got in trouble, I was in prison in West Virginia. So the media, I didn't see it. I didn't know. I had no. They weren't showing it up there, and if they were, it wasn't on the channels that we were seeing. So I had no idea. And then in 2018, I was approached by Jenna, And Jenna said, you know, she messaged me, I think it was like on Facebook or something. And she was like, hey, do you remember when we did, you know, when we did that thing? And of course I did. And she was like, well, I have a lawyer and he's willing to take our case. And this is a really big deal. And he's still doing it to other people. And there's so many of us that he's done this to, because we thought it was just our little group. We thought, we didn't know how huge it was. And she was like, do you want me to get you in contact with the lawyer? And the lawyer was Bradley Edwards. And I was like, sure, you know, you're right. We did do that thing. And now we are all grown and we have moved on. But the fact is, it's still going on. And it's, there are people who are still hurting. There are people who are not getting justice. So I decided to participate originally as a Jane Doe. I wasn't ready at the time to tell the world, you know, my daughter was really young. It was hard for my husband, I think, to process. We had been married for like 7 years and it was like, oh yeah, and I'm this too. Like, imagine being married to someone for 7 years and then all of a sudden, whoa, you know, it was a big thing. And then last year, when I realized that it's not going away and people are not getting held accountable, I said, you know what? I'm sick of seeing my friend Jenna go through it alone. And I do think there are power in numbers, and the more people that there are out there saying that, hey, this happened to me, the better. Like, now since I've spoken up, I've received thousands of messages. Every time I go to a new Epstein related event, whether it be media or whatever, there's a new person there coming out for the first time, and they tell us, you know, it's because of you guys that you guys keep speaking out, that now I feel like I can. And we welcome them, and you know, everyone's always very nice to everyone on that side, but there is drama as you've heard, I'm sure, like you said, or you know, with the communities. But yeah, I don't know where we go from here, or you know, how I fit into it all. But I know that I took some of the compensation that I have received, and I'm in the process of building a nonprofit. I just filed. I have a team of 9 professionals that are on my board. I just filed for the 501(c). I've worked in the mental health community for over a decade already, so I have a really good reputation there, and I'm just excited to share the story and bring me more resources and offer some kind of real prevention. So even after something so ugly, you know, I think that this is really, something beautiful is going to come out of it. And I see a comment there that said the FBI didn't do anything. I do want to make a comment about that.
Go for it.
You're right. The FBI didn't do anything, because my name has been given to the FBI several times by several people, going all the way back, as far as I know, to 2018. They've had my name. I have never been contacted, never, by anyone. I have gone through lawsuits regarding this. And one, not lawsuits, but you know, what they were, civil, but I don't even know what they're called, class actions, due to this, and won. and they still have not reached out. I have been Googled in the files, and after an event that I did, they sent an email to the FBI. Somebody did. And they came back and we were coded and they had no idea who we were still. And they had no idea. It would be like so-and-so possibly questioned twice in Florida, or so-and-so possibly connected to this, never interviewed. Like, you guys are putting in there that we've never been interviewed. Why? I'm not saying that I have any more names to give because I only have one abuser, but the fact is no one's even asked. So if they're not asking me, they're definitely not asking the people who do have names and have more, you know, information to give. And they're not doing their job, because if they did, I would have at least been, hey, let me question you. And I know systems are the same.
All right. I'm just going to mute you, Wendy, while I start to read the questions for you. And we've got you're doing absolutely fantastic. You had loads of questions come in. It's been nothing but love and support in the chat. And we've got one here from Shane. Wendy, when you first met Epstein, what was your impression of him personally? And at what point did you realize there was something much darker happening behind the scenes?
When I first met him, my impression was that he was obviously very wealthy. He was charming. He was nice. There was nothing like mean or off-right sinister with the way that he spoke. The minute that I realized that something darker was there was the minute that he started to direct me on how he liked to be touched. And then ultimately at the end, when he was unsatisfied, like that was like the equivalent to a adult temper tantrum with blue balls. I don't know.
Was Maxwell ever there?
Not that I am aware of. I never met Maxwell, and neither did any of my close survivor sisters, I would say.
So Sarah is asking, Wendy, how differently would you parent a child knowing what you know?
This question is, I get asked this a lot, and that's why one of the one things that I always say is to, you don't want to be your friend's friend or your child's friend, but in a sense you do want to try to befriend your child's friend. Welcoming their friends into your home and getting to know the type of people that your kid is hanging out with. What is their home life like? Have you met their parents? Have you, you know, are they getting in trouble? Have they been in trouble? Just being more curious and more aware of the people that your kids are hanging out with. And also, you know, we have tools today that we didn't have back then, as far as smartphones have GPSs and stuff like that. Cameras, I know it's invasive. Obviously, don't put a camera in your kid's room, but I have cameras outside of my kids' windows. On the outside of the house, and that is simply because I was one of those kids jumping out of my window or jumping people in the window. And just to really be involved with who they're hanging out with, that's the main thing, because your kids are going to be influenced by them.
All right, so you're getting asked, how old were you when your parents got divorced, and was your dad a cop?
My dad was not a cop, and I was 5 years old when they got divorced. My dad was a mechanic.
Okay. All right. So let's see.
If my dad was a cop, we probably could have solved a lot of this or prevented it.
So Sarah is asking, what does Wendy think of the women who lure girls into this? And why do you think they really do it? You probably have to separate girls who are groomed themselves into it versus women like Maxwell. I guess there's two different categories.
I think that because this is something that is brought up within the survivor community, and this is probably why this question is getting brought up, because there are a lot of us started as underage, and some of us were doing this for several years. Some of them passed the age of 18, but they started underage. They passed the age of 18. I think that at a certain point, there's a level of abuse that the recruiting part is a part of the abuse. It is a tactic to, a lot of people don't understand that is part of the abuse, but at some point a victim can very easily become a perpetrator. And in some cases, I believe that that has happened. If they were grown women, because there are grown women, I guess you could say like Maxwell, who were overage and they were recruiting. Again, the recruitment part is a part of the abuse. And it's very hard to determine if these individuals were abused in recruiting or were they on the same level and should be in prison. And they're taking, you know, the easy way out by saying that they're victims. I don't know. I like to say that, you know, I want to believe that everyone's telling the truth, but I'm also not an idiot. And I know that where there's fame, opportunity for fame or money, that brings ugliness out of people.
Yeah, you got a question from Agent Orange. Did you notice any suspicious activity from school resource officers?
Not in Florida, no. Because I went to a brand new high school, and like I said, I was probably there for 1 year, and then I had an accident, and then I was homeschooled. So no.
All right. So Lady of the Lake's asking, did you make any friends, and have you kept in touch with them?
Jenna Lisa Jones. She's another survivor. We were middle school best friends, and we keep in touch to this day. I would still consider her one of my best friends, and we do a lot of this together. We travel and we've been on interviews together. We both did the Soft White Underbelly. So she has her own episode on there too.
So what do you think then of Pam Bondi, Todd Blanche, and Maxwell, you know, getting rewarded with the soft prison?
I think it's, I mean, it's unfathomable to me that I probably did more prison time than any of them will. And I just, it's not right. It's showing the country that not just the country, but, you know, when I say the country, the people that I'm really worried about is the youth, the teenagers, because that's our future. And if they're seeing that these people aren't being held accountable, like it's not, I worry for our future.
Yeah, well said. So we've answered all of the questions, Wendy. Huge thank you for coming on. Is there anything you'd like to say in conclusion to the viewers, please?
No, just thank you for the ones that I've received a majority of support, and I want to thank you and just encourage everyone that if new survivors come out, I hope that they are treated with the same support that I have gotten, so that we can encourage, there's thousands of us, you know, and the more that we can show love and support and a community, the more that they're likely to start saying the stuff that we really need to hear. So that's it.
Well, all right, well said. And for legal reasons on my channel that I've got from the cops in this country, I've got to ask you that you give us permission to publish your story, and do you waive your anonymity?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. You have a great rest of your day. I'm going to close the show. Huge thank you for coming on. And, you know, we wish you all the best with what you're doing.
Okay. Thank you so much. You guys have a good day or night.
Thank you, Wendy. Almost. Thank you. Cheers, Wendy. Bye.
Bye.
Oh, what a fantastic guest, folks. Thank you for all of your questions. And, yeah, thank you for staying tuned as well when we had a little technical difficulty earlier. Let me put Wendy's website in the live chat again, and Instagram, if you want to go over and send her some love from this channel and support her work and follow her. And Shane, the guest book, has been on fire, like I said yesterday, booking interview after interview after interview. No rest for me, is there going to be? And we've got another one tonight. Steve's Untold Stories is coming on. Tomorrow, Fighting Demons, and also Iran War stuff, and then Iran War stuff on the 8th, and then Craig Lund, Satanic Big Tech Part 2 on the 9th. So, yeah, we're going full throttle. Thank you, Shane, keeping me busy.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At ChumbaCasino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
If the world were like a Sleep Number mattress, everything would adapt for your comfort. Because as your life changes and your body changes, Sleep Number mattresses adapt and shift to give you personalized comfort night after night. And now everything's on sale during our Memorial Day event. Save up to $1,200 on mattresses, plus free delivery when you add a base. Ends Monday. To experience a whole new world of comfort, visit a Sleep Number store or go to sleepnumber.com. Sleep Number, to a good life's sleep.